logical explanation for this.
Okay, well, what we're thinking of as aliens are they're extra-dimensional beings.
Paranormal activity. Really exist.
The government knows about them.
Are we alone? Is there life after death?
They want the major population centers wiped out so that the few that are left will be more easily controllable.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back inside of another fresh pot of Conspiracies Over Coffee. I am your host, Aaron, joined as usual by my co-host, Stu. What is happening, Stu?
Not much, Aaron. How are you doing today?
I am fantastic. I am ready to jump into the Atlantic off of the straight-up pointing Titanic.
Huh. Okay.
So to speak.
Wow.
Well, it can't be any worse than you ending last week by talking about popping my rivets.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing as being mind blown. It's popping rivet.
Even my wife said it was a sexual innuendo, so I'm going to trust her. Okay, well, you got today's coffee?
Yeah. Are we jumping right into that?
Yeah, we might as well. We'll get anything else that we need to do right after.
This was given to us by a listener named Lori. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Lori.
It is from Trader Joe's. I don't know if that's a
convenience store.
No, it's a like a Whole Foods, I think.
Oh,
like
okay.
Like a Costco.
Yeah, because that's organic fair trade, isn't it?
Yeah. But I don't know if it's like a nationwide store, if it's like a Michigan thing. I don't know.
Couldn't tell you.
But it's organic Bolivian blend. It is a medium dark roast, sweet caramel flavor. Medium body.
Mm. Sounds good. And we threw it in the thermos to bring it out here because we just brewed it in the house. And had a nice little pop to it, which means it's a little more acidic, so that's going to be nice.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to read the entire description here. Oh. Trader Joe's Bolivian Blend Coffee is a fair trade coffee that is sourced from small family farms in the land located between the peaks of the Andes and the Amazon Basin, which is the heart of the Bolivian coffee country. This region is ideal growing conditions for unique, perfectly balanced coffee. Our Bolivian blend is a medium dark roast with a smooth textured body, delicate acidity, and sweet flavor and caramel characteristics.
Characteristics. See, I'm interested to try this because this is a flavored bean, and as you know, I flavor my beans. So I'm interested to see how they match up.
That also sounds dirty.
What?
Yeah, flavor my bean.
I didn't say... you know what? I'm not going there. Okay, so, as usual, the ranking system before Stewie dives into it over there. Nectar of the Gods, Excellent Espresso, Average Joe, Depresso, and Muddy Water. Let's hope this is not an Average Joe, an Average Trader Joe.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I'm back at it with the puns again, people. All I am right. On
fire.
Okay. Well, let's see here.
Smells good.
You're right. Did you smell it? Because it does smell good.
No, I just taking your line before you could say it.
Oh, yeah, it smells good. Don't take my thing. Let's see if it tastes good.
Cue the 13 seconds of mouth noises and sniffs from Stu.
Let's try it one more time.
You the 5-second sip of retry. Aaron waits patiently.
It's good.
Oh my goodness, here we go again.
You taste it. And then after you taste it.
I'm not gonna lie to you, it almost smells like a hot chocolate, which is weird because we forgot to mention. Just rolling with heavy whipping cream. Figure we give it a little bit of cream, but let the caramel flavor speak for itself. Let me give it a shot.
Yeah, give it a shot. I taste a hint of the caramel.
I do as well.
Which is what I was expecting.
It makes me wonder whether I'm over-flavoring my beans. Because I've been drinking mine black, which is probably why.
Does the heavy whipping cream give it a different flavor? Does that have flavor to it?
I mean, it has a little bit of flavor, don't get me wrong. But it's more there for just to add a cream. You know what I mean? It's not... Doesn't have like a flavored flavor.
Right. Like milk.
Yeah. But I mean, I like it. Honestly. I'd say excellent espresso, personally.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a excellent average Trader Joe.
A new rank. Not bad. I'd give it an excellent espresso. It's smooth, very acidic.
Yes, yeah, so we're sitting at what, like a 3.5 and a 4?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not bad. It is acidic. It does taste. Yeah. You can tell.
Definitely more acidic than bold, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's what you get out of a good medium roast like that. I enjoy it. So, back at it again, people. Titanic Part 2. You ready to jump into this, Stu?
I'm ready to pop your rivets.
Oh, my goodness. Can we cut?
Nope. Oh, we got to keep it
going. You're lucky we don't have a hired hand running the soundboard. So last week we went over the absolute disaster that is the Titanic, as it was reported. And we mixed in a few conspiracies, quote unquote, because if you want to call those things conspiracies, I mean, they were kind of things that definitely happened. Like the fire, the rivet popping, the failed expansion joints. Those things... In hindsight, if there is no conspiracy, it might just be part of the whole reason for the sinking of the unsinkable ship. Today, we're going to go ahead and examine some of the wilder conclusions that some have drawn. And now, when I say wild...
I mean, a lot of them are morbid.
Yeah, there's some morbidity to it, for sure. But there's also... Some of them seem a little too odd to be...
Too conspiracy for conspiracy?
For people to just cram them under like we're just some crazy people for possibly believing them.
Mm.
But that's what we're here for, people, because trust no one, question everything.
Right.
That's the motto. So the first big hitter there is that J.P. Morgan planned the disaster to kill his rivals. Now, this is where we're going to start tying some people from last week into the grander scheme of these things. As mentioned last week, J.P. Morgan had business, quote-unquote, and canceled going onto the Titanic at the last second, which is sketchopotamus, if you ask me.
Sketcho, yep.
And, I mean, the thing that pissed most of us off the most is that he killed Leo in the process.
You don't do that.
The idea behind this theory is that J.P. Morgan planned the Titanic disaster to kill off his the rival millionaires that we mentioned last week, Jacob Astor, Isidore Strauss, and Benjamin Guggenheim. If this were the case, in all aspects, he succeeded.
Yeah,
right?
He did what he wanted to do.
Yep, they all went down with the ship. I will go down with this ship.
Okay.
I will.
Nope.
No? Stop there?
Yep.
Okay.
I think we're legally only supposed to sing that many words of it.
You know what? You and your legality. Okay? Stop it. So according to this theory, J.P. Morgan wanted to kill these men off because they opposed the creation of the Federal Reserve. However, allegedly, Astor and Guggenheim didn't appear to have taken a position on it, and Strauss actually supported the Federal Reserve. Another portion of this theory claims that the Rothschild banking family, who we will definitely be doing a future, I would probably say, series on.
They're a disgusting family.
Yeah, they're conspiracy. The word conspiracy is kind of synonymous with Rothschild for anybody that doesn't know that family. There is a big portion of the theory claims that the Rothschilds were in on planning the deaths of Astor, Strauss, and Guggenheim. Conveniently enough, the Titanic sank in 1912, and the opening of the Federal Reserve, goddamn our ancestors, happened in 1913. There are also versions of this theory that men, that these men were opposed to federal income tax rather than the Federal Reserve, which, either way, goddamn our ancestors. And mind you, J.P. Morgan really did have a hand on the creation of the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve owned his International Mercantile Marine, which opened the White Star Line, which owned the Titanic. So
he just owned everything.
Right. So a little bit of a trickle effect there on why this conspiracy may have come about. Now, you might be thinking, okay, how could J.P. Morgan convince a captain to steer a ship into an iceberg and hope that it would sink a ship and kill, you know, his and the Rothschilds and the Catholic Order of the Jesuits, which, yes, they became a part of some of the versions of this theory, too, because I guess you can't trust Catholics. Wow, that sounded really mean coming from me. That wasn't a stab at Catholics by any means. If you're a Catholic, I'm so sorry. That sounded so rotten.
I was not taking
a stab at you. I was implying that these people that created
these people that created this theory
felt like you couldn't trust the Catholics enough that you had to include them in on J.P. Morgan intentionally sinking the Titanic. Anyways, let me move along here before people start tuning out because they're like, this guy's a
prick. Only mail we're gonna get is hate.
Yeah, but I mean, really though, this whole thing isn't really all that complicated. It's not like he, you know, told the captain, "Yep, steer it into an iceberg." The area that the Titanic was actually routed to travel was actually a very bad ice area. You also have to consider that it was April, a time of the year that is still especially cold, especially in the Atlantic. They had received reports from other ships informing them that, hey, there's killer icebergs floating about. But did they maybe stay the course due to calls made from higher up? Could it have been disguised as, let's show the world, although there may have been a much, much darker intentions at play?
Let's show the world that we can go through this ice minefield.
Well, no, I mean, because they're trying to make it to New York in record time and things like that, you know, allegedly. So that might have been the captain's mindset. Oh, we're gonna cut through here. He says this is the best route, and we're going to crank full speed, not knowing, you know. He's trying to, at this point, maybe please J.P. Morgan. So think about it. You put these other men in a lose-lose situation, basically, because this is back when it's women and children only. So if they're going to, you know, even though they're rich, filthy rich, they can't just jump on a lifeboat to go save themselves, because otherwise you come back, you're still rich, but you have no honor. Nobody's going to want to do business with you. And also think about the fact that between Astor at $87 million, Guggenheim at $4 million, and Strauss at $6.6 million, you're talking about a combined net worth of nearly $100 million or $2.7 billion today, at a time where you're thinking about creating the Federal Reserve, which is essentially the biggest thing that screws all of us. And the fact that every time you get a dollar, it's depreciated more and more.
Thank you.
Thank you, he says.
I love making half of my paycheck.
It's great just to think of these dollar bills back then and how much value they held compared to now. Thank you, Federal Reserve.
I can feel my wallet depreciating.
Right. Thank you for charging us interest on printing money for us to use.
To give
this
back
to you.
It seems
really stupid. Right. It's so stupid. And of course, not to go too off topic here, but it used to be, we give them gold, they print these certificates, basically, is what cash was, or little, you know, bonds or promissory notes. And, you know, now it's like we don't actually give them gold. It's just them running a printing machine and pumping it into the system, and boom, dollar's worth less. I really like this coffee. But by the time J.P. Morgan died in 1913, mind you, His net worth was at $118.3 million, or $3.6 billion today. So
that's, I mean, there's a lot of, like, if you look back at, like, Guggenheim and Strauss, yes, they're worth a lot, but, like, Miley Cyrus is worth more than them.
Well, yeah.
But you know what I mean?
This
I mean,
is
like,
back when you actually
stuff.
Had to do something yeah. important in order to be rich.
But they're like the richest people walking around flaunting everything, and the average YouTube star makes that much money now.
Right. But, I mean, even so, I mean, it's like, well, I mean, once you transfer the equivalent, Miley Cyrus isn't worth no $3.6 billion.
No, no.
So, I mean, yeah, as of then dollars to now dollars, not, you know.
Yes, I see
changing for inflation. But, so anyways, JP's net worth at the time of his death was higher than all three combined, but from a majority rules mindset, is it possible that JP Morgan wanted to have greater say regarding the Federal Reserve or federal taxation? And, another thing I think is kind of weird that people seem to overlook quite a bit, even though he was a little older, but people overlook the fact that J.P. Morgan died in March of 1913. This is not even a year after the Titanic sank. Mm-hmm. He apparently died in his sleep while traveling abroad. We all know how these greater forces, I'll call them greater forces for lack of a better term, or fear of child pornography being planted on my computer and me spending the rest of my days rotting in a prison cell for accidentally pinpointing the truth in this podcast. But anyways.
Huh. Wow.
We know how these, you know, these greater forces like to make things look like they were nonchalant. They either go with like, oh, he died in his sleep or in a traffic accident or suicide or he's in prison for child porn. There is no in between. You know what I mean? It's always like either the extreme of they're a terrible person, don't trust them, or they're dead, but they died in a very discreet, we had no hands in it kind of way.
Right.
But anyways, could J.P. Morgan have bitten off more than he could chew by planning these men on this ship and perhaps being exterminated for being a liability? It really isn't as far-fetched as today's media would want you to believe, you know what I mean? Especially with all the stuff surrounding the Rothschild family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, could J.P. Morgan have just been the Lee Harvey Oswald pawn? You know what I mean?
Like, so was he the puppet? Man?
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Could J.P. Morgan, although he had all the power in the world with that money, could he have gotten too tied up into some things and maybe
bit off more than he could chew?
Right. That, because, I mean, Illuminati, man. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But moving on to the next somewhat J.P. Morgan-related conspiracy, the conspiracy that the Titanic never actually sank.
Nope.
Now, it's not what you think, people. If you've never heard about this before, we're not saying...
There's clearly a ship...
Yes.
At the bottom of the ocean, and people did die.
Yes, there was a ship, and it really did sink. But this conspiracy states that the Titanic was actually switched with the RMS Olympic. Now, remember last week we told you that the Titanic was actually the second ship, and we told you we were going to be, you know, it might be foreshadowing. Well, it was foreshadowing. Surprise. I like to leave Easter eggs. The Olympic was the first. The Olympic was damaged while sailing from Southampton, England, to New York in September of 1911. It had returned to Harland and Wolfe's shipping yard in Belfast for some repairs.
It was damaged on its maiden voyage as well.
Yeah. So it gets returned to Belfast for more repairs in March of 1912, just a few weeks before the Titanic set sail. And now, mind you, when I say some repairs... These repairs, this thing had a hole in the side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So this theory claims that someone assumed that the Olympic was too severely damaged to be profitable. And so at some point they switched the Titanic and the Olympic to purposefully sink the damaged ship and receive insurance money for it.
Which is crazy, because the insurance that they would have gotten back for it wasn't even enough to cover the expense of building the ship.
Right. But the thing about that is, and I know a lot of that's the brush off for a lot of people is that, well, that's not what it was, because the insurance money they're going to get isn't going to be enough to cover the ship. Well, this theory, according to this theory, the Olympic was considered at fault. Well, actually, this isn't according to this theory. This right here is fact. The Olympic was considered at fault for the previous collisions.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the insurers, Lloyd's of London, refused to pay for the damage. So here you've got this gigantic ship that is basically just going to sit there and waste away because it was too damaged to continually operate. So why wouldn't you try to get some money out of it? You know what I mean? It's just going to sit there in a bay and right. not get used. Right. What are you going to scrap it out? You're going to get less in scrap value than you are.
Can you even, back then, could you even drag something to a scrapyard?
Oh, I'm sure you couldn't. They would have to sit there and dismantle it piece by piece, which would take, you know, manpower.
Could you imagine
time.
Being the guy working at that scrapyard? They just drag in the RMS Olympic.
Yeah, that'd be nuts. Here you go. We'd like to, you know, have you weigh this up for us and see how much we can get for it.
87 bucks.
And the actual process of switching the two ships wouldn't be very hard because very few locations on either ship actually stated the ship's names. A lot of the stuff on the ship, or on both ships, just said White Star on them, which is the owning company of both ships. So under this theory, the plan was that once the ship was at sea, the Seacocks, Stuart, calm down.
Hold on. You said popping rivets was kind of weird, and you're saying Seacocks.
Let me explain what a Seacock is.
Oh.
It's a valve in the hull of the boat. So when you open this valve...
you open the Seacock.
When you open the Seacock, it'll slowly flood the ship.
Huh.
So maybe that doesn't seem, you know... Here we are out at sea. I'm going to go down, open this valve, slowly sinks the ship. A lot of people might think, okay, well, no, it wouldn't be that because it wouldn't have sank in 3 hours. Well, here's a little bit of evidence that would back this. Let's look at the sea trials. So before these ships were to set sail with a bunch of passengers, obviously, they got to be put through some tests. They get put through the ringer. The Olympics trials, the original Olympus...
Olympics.
The original Olympus trials in 1910 took 2 days, and they included several high-speed runs. They have to open it up, go full throttle. The Titanic's trials, however, only lasted 1 day.
It's like a drag race?
Basically, yes, but against nobody, essentially. The Titanic's trials, however, only lasted 1 day, and no work happened that put the ship over half speed. So... The theory with this one is that since the Titanic was actually the damaged Olympic, the patched-up hull couldn't operate at full speed for any long periods.
Mm.
So that's why it only operated up to half speed, because if you open that sucker up full throttle, you got these crappy rivets that...
The rivets start popping, your seacocks start leaking.
Yeah. Oh boy!
Yeah, I mean, hey, I don't make the terminology here.
Which is funny though, because at the museum for the Titanic, they do have rivets there that were clearly, you know, distressed and all that, which is like, well, what if that was from the patching of the Olympic?
That was an amazing exhibit.
I didn't get to go, unfortunately.
That was really fun.
I just watched 3 hour renditions of in 3D of the thing sinking.
I just see real things in person.
Must be nice. So although there were several structural and aesthetic differences between the Titanic and the Olympic, which is Olympus.
Olympic.
Olympic. Olympic. We got to not have the Olympics anymore because otherwise I'm going to keep screwing these up. But yeah, there's some obvious differences that a lot of people like to point out as being the other reason why, oh, this is absolutely not, the case here. But the Titanic and the Olympic both had several changes made at the last second.
Mm-hmm.
One big example, which there are pictures proving this, was that when the Titanic was pictured and photographed being built. It had 14 evenly spaced portholes, which are like on like the second deck down, like the
windows
that you could look out, but they're not really windows because there's no glass. But it had 14 evenly spaced portholes. But when it left Southampton on April 10th, 1912, it had 16 unevenly spaced portholes. So would it kind of been an unnecessary change to go back and make when you've already built all these, it's already been painted, it's, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At that point, they're working on cosmetics, and all of a sudden this ship takes off, and coincidentally enough, has 16, so you've added two, and now they're unevenly spaced. There's also been, and I don't want to say exactly which switched from which, but one had carpet while the other had tile. And they, I believe they pulled the carpet out of the one and tiled, or they pulled the, or they carpeted over the tile. I forget which it was.
Huh.
But yeah, they did some flooring changes. They, and this is all at the last second. Titanic changes at the last second. And this is also pretty weird and creepy. There were people who helped build the Titanic that also helped make the switch in the shipyard of Harland and Wolff. That, you know, over the years they started coming out and saying that the two ships had in fact been swapped. They were told that if they said anything, it would be the last job that they ever had. So obviously this is going to prompt, especially back then, it's going to prompt you to keep quiet in fear of not being able to support your family.
I would have just hated to lose my job lifting heavy steel and putting boats together.
Well, I mean, but it was probably really good money back then, right, though. It's that or else, you know, start your own farm, basically, at that point.
You either died in a factory or died in a field.
Yep, take your pick. And they didn't want skin cancer, so they chose the boat. Patty Fenton is someone who had actually told his fellow seamen, I get so scared to say the words in my notes because I'm using proper sea terminology and you were just making it weird.
Rivet popping porthole seaman.
But Patty told his fellows, I gotta say what kind of fellows, that the ships were in fact switched.
Swashbucklers, that's what we should call them.
A man in Australia sent a letter to the Northern Star newspaper on July 31st, 1996, which talks about a conversation his son had with Patty. Here's an extract. This was extracted from the letter. Do you want to read it or do you want me to read it?
When the surviving crew got to port, where they were all taken aside and met by two men, one in a high position in the company, the other man was in very high position in the government. The government man read the crew the Official Secrets Act, explaining that if they told of the real reason for the sinking or the rumors of an insurance scam, they would serve a minimum of 20 years in jail and would never get a job when they got out.
So I would say that's a pretty good motivating factor for me to just keep my mouth shut, especially back then where they would just shoot you for...
Thanks, government.
Right. Shoot you for no reason. There's no camera phones.
Yeah. There's no closed caption TV.
Yeah. And I mean, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, insurance money is not going to cover all of the costs that you sunk into the Olympics. Olympic. See? Oh, my gosh.
There's no S, and it's not the Olympia.
It's because in my mind I know that there are three ships, so I keep saying Olympics, as in, like, all I'm, like, trying to combine all three in my brain because we're talking about the Titanic, but then I bring up the Olympic. Obviously not going to cover the full cost of the Olympic, but definitely sure would be better than getting absolutely nothing and just having a ship that isn't able to function sitting there and taking up space. And this guy mentions government agent, not government agent, but a very high up member of the government. And that just, you know, right there, I'm not trying to transcribe the term government into what I said earlier about porn being on my computer or anything, but it's, I love you, government.
Yep, they're just, they just coincide.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Official Secrets Act.
Did you have to throw your coffee cup at the table?
I'm sorry.
Please don't do that again.
Second week in a row where my throat's starting to get itchy.
Yeah. You got allergies or something?
Probably. It's fall, man. Pollen counts.
Pollen.
So, yeah, anyways, that about sums that whole thing up. So, boats are swapped. They sink the bad one. Titanic, the real Titanic, carries on as the Olympic. Olympic rests at the bottom of the sea.
Which that one, to me, makes a lot of sense. I mean, that out of the, like, to the next one, it makes the first one more logical.
Right. See, this next one is legit.
We should call Brendan Fraser for this one and Tom Cruise to
come and investigate for us.
Come investigate for us.
There, else we can get Nicolas Cage and what's his name to go down and find the treasure for us. So this one is about a mummy's curse dooming the Titanic.
God,
it's a fun theory.
It is
about a cursed mummy dooming the Titanic. A man named William Steed, a British editor who subscribed to early 20th century spiritualism. He'd spent the past several years claiming that a cursed mummy was causing mysterious destruction and disaster in London. I mean, it's like the main thing that he wrote about. So on board of the Titanic, Steed starts repeating this tale to a bunch of people about the mummies, you know, cursing in London. So after the ship sank, a survivor recounted Steed's story to the New York World, and the media picked it up. The next month, the Washington Post runs a headline, and the exact headline is, Stu.
God. Ghosts of the Titanic. Vengeance of hoodoo mummy followed man who wrote its history.
Followed him right to the bottom of the ocean.
Hoodoo.
Hoodoo. And I, as I was like typing that, I'm like, it's got to be voodoo, right? You're going to be talking voodoo. No, it's hoodoo.
Hoodoo.
And so some people linked the mummy's curse to Egyptian artifacts that survivor Margaret Unsinkable Molly Brown.
Kathy Bates?
Yes, Kathy Bates. There were some artifacts like this that she really did take on the Titanic with her to deliver to a museum in Denver.
Was Kathy Bates an artifact smuggler? Is that it? Was she just...
No, she was too good of... Oh, there could be a conspiracy behind Molly Brown. Anyways, so in other versions, the mummy was actually aboard the Titanic because the British Museum had sold it to an American who was shipping it home. However, it was never reported that the mummy was ever actually loaded onto the ship, but there were some Egyptian artifacts that Molly Brown had.
Well, then where's the mummy?
Well, I mean, the story might have... The secret lies with Charlotte.
I mean,
to quote National Treasure.
Where's the mummy, then?
Steed knew.
Steve.
He was the one that wrote, but, I mean, who knows?
Okay.
Who knows where the mummy's at, Stu? That's the secret behind it.
Who's the mummy?
Pharaoh, I believe it was.
Is that a person?
Yeah, only like an Egyptian leader, yes. You didn't.
Kathy Bates?
No, oh my gosh, give it up about Kathy Bates already. I mean, but personally, if I'm going to, because and here's my take on it, though. Is that they say, oh, well, you know, there's no record of a mummy ever being loaded onto the ship. Personally, if I'm going to bring a mummy onto a ship full of, you know, 2,000 and some odd people,
mm-hmm.
I'd probably disguise it, like wrap it in a piano or, you know, in a car or something to avoid having to tell people why I'm.
Or you could make fun, like have fun and be like a Weekend at Bernie's. And just like walk around with him and pretend like he's alive.
Like
but he's
slow dancing
dead.
With him. Holding him in your arms. And brittle fingers.
Dress him up in like a Hawaiian shirt.
But anyway, I mean, and if that's what, if you're into necrophilia and stuff like that.
I didn't say you had to bang it.
But I mean, I'm just saying personally.
You might want to pop its rivets and
personally,
stuff.
This thing's going to just hang out in my Model T or my Model A, I should say.
Yeah, you're going to hide it.
Yeah, because I'm not going to tell the people loading my shit. Hey, man, check it out. Dead body.
Dead body. I think it was okay back then, though.
Yeah, probably. I mean, more than likely. You know, their boxes were a lot cooler to be buried in than what a lot of other people were buried in. Probably just a wooden box at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, is it possible that a mummy... You know, I'm not going to sit here and, like, poke fun of that because I'm along the mentality. I'm getting older now, and I'm just realizing that, you know what, I have no idea. It is very possible that a mummy sank the Titanic. That a mummy's
curse is real.
Couldn't tell you, you know? But this next one is absolute fact, so bear with me here.
Oh, no.
Jack Dawson is Jay Gatsby. Okay, bear with me here, because I know they're fictional characters.
Well, yeah.
But this is a fan theory that is a stroke of genius, in my opinion. So this fan theory states that Jack survived the sinking of the ship, even though that cold-hearted bitch Rose let go of his hand, and, you know.
Damn it, Kate Winslet.
Right.
Why'd you have to let go, even though you said you'd never let go?
Yeah, I never let go until 20 minutes from now when I gotta peel your frozen corpse hand off of my hand to get to a whistle. Even though I could have made... I don't mean to keep rerunning the... Because everybody always talks about there was definitely enough room on that door. You know, like, or Jack could have, you know, found a different door.
I'm assuming there was a lot of stuff floating around.
Yeah, you know, 800 and some odd foot ship that split in half. I got to assume there's something to float on. But anyways, so this fan theory, Jack ends up living and... he goes on to build a life for himself in America in an attempt to reunite with Rose. He survives, builds himself into a party-going showman in the jazz age in hopes that, you know, one day Rose will appear, but he ends up finding love with another woman, Daisy.
Oh, he gave up on Rose.
Yes, because Daisy, okay? And obviously not as much of a conspiracy as much as it is a complete compliment to Leo's acting abilities, because the dude... is a phenomenal actor.
That had nothing to do with the Titanic sinking.
No, it really didn't at all. But I'm just saying, maybe man crush on Leo. I don't know. Couldn't tell you. Moving on to the next actual conspiracy, though. I just thought that I would throw that in there because I was like, wow, that is actually, you know, the fact that Leonardo DiCaprio played Jack Dawson and Jay Gatsby was like, huh.
Hmm.
The timeline...
They're slowly pulling everything together.
Right. But the next one, Titanic was attacked by a German U-boat. So because the Titanic was supposedly an engineering masterpiece, some theorists believe that it was sunk by an outside force. No, not the force of a killer iceberg, the force of a torpedo shot from a German submarine. Several survivors did state that they heard explosions after the ship began sinking, and some saw a searchlight in the distance prior to the arrival of a rescue ship. Could the Germans have been sick of hearing the term unsinkable and said, let's see about that? Here are a few things that may support, you know, the theories from earlier stating that the ship truly was sank on purpose. I mean, there's not really a whole lot to the German U-boat thing other than it is an idea that's been snowballed out there.
Can you imagine being in a German submarine in 1912?
No, absolutely
not. I wouldn't want to be underwater in a 1912 tin can.
Yeah, me either. Floating around in a coffee can. Like, yeah.
Freezing cold water with missiles attached to you.
Which, who was the first person that was like, I wonder if this would work? You know what I mean? No, thank you.
How much air do we got?
Right. But yeah, so here's a few things that may support, you know, the idea of the ship being sank on purpose. In 1886, William T. Stead, ironically, you know, a part of the theory above about the mummy cursing everybody.
Oh, yep.
That dude published a short story titled How the Atlantic Mail Steamer Went Down. The plot of the story is eerily similar to the Titanic disaster. A mail steamer in the Atlantic collides with another vessel, and a shortage of lifeboats on board caused an enormous loss of life. Then, more than a decade later, you know, because mind you, like I said, this book was a lot before. So more than a decade later, Stead was a passenger on the Titanic, and he died in the wreck. But supposedly, Stu, a medium channeled his spirit not long after his death.
Huh.
So below is apparently his recollection.
Oh, I was still so near the earth that I could see everything going on there. Where I was, I could see the wrecked ship, the people, the whole scene. And it seemed to pull me into action. I could help. And so in a few seconds, though I am now a long...
Though I am now taking a long time to tell you.
Yes, thou... It was only a few seconds, really. I found myself changed from the helpless state to one of action. Helpful, not helpless. I was helpful, too, I think.
So, together with his group of now discarnate spirits, Steed made his way to the other side. And he continues.
I pass a little now. The end came, and it was all finished with. It was like waiting for a liner to sail. We waited until all were aboard. I mean, we waited until the disaster was complete. The saved. The saved saved. The dead alive. Then, in one hole, we moved our scene. It was a strange method of traveling for us all. And we were a strange crew, bound for we knew not where. The whole scene was incredibly, and hold on, indescribably pathetic. Many, knowing what had occurred, were in agony of doubt as to their people left behind and as to their own future state. What would it hold for them? What would they be taken to see him? What would their sentence be? Who talks like that?
Well, you know, you got to keep in mind that the psychic person that, you know, had allegedly been talking to him was probably trying to... He talked like this, too, in 1912, okay? That's what all happened.
All right, yeah, that's just a hard read.
Yeah.
They put words after words that should be in front of it. Oh, God.
But hey, he goes on, too. He wasn't finished.
Yeah. Others were almost mental wrecks. They were nothing. They seemed too uninterested in everything. Their minds were paralyzed. A strange crew, indeed, of human souls waiting their ratings in the new land.
So, some in Steed's group tried desperately to save their possessions. For him, it was heartbreaking to witness the effects of a mass number of people being jarred from their bodies at once. And he continues here.
There were hundreds of bodies floating in the water, dead. Hundreds souls carried through the air, alive, very much alive, some were. Many, realizing their death had come, were enraged at their own powerlessness to save their valuables. They thought to save what they had on Earth prized so much.
They fought to save.
They fought to save. Yes.
Yeah. And he continues.
Oh, God, this guy talks a lot.
Yeah, he sure does.
He's got a lot to say.
He's talking to the psychic lady.
The scene on the boat at the time of striking was not pleasant, but it was as nothing to the scene among the poor souls newly thrust out of their bodies, all unwillingly. It was both heartbreaking and repellent. And thus we waited. Waited until all were collected, until all were ready. And then we moved our scene to a different land. Was that just a long way to say they died?
I think it was a long way to say we all died, and then as we died, we were thrust up into a different ship, and we waited in this ship until all of the people that were going to die died, and then our ship set sail. Was it a spaceship? Steed?
Steed?
See, I mean... Even though it's probably a I mean it could you know what there I go again it, this could be very well be a story that you know the psychic lady made up to give herself
credibility
but also a very cool take on it, the fact that, you know, spirits being jarred from bodies starting to rise because the spirits are being jerked from them, you know, so fast in death. And then, you know, a lot of the because this is a ship that had a lot of rich people on it trying to get back to their earthly possessions, even though they don't mean anything anymore.
Right. They're trying, they're greedy.
Yeah.
They're just trying to take it.
Yeah. So I thought that was a pretty cool, little touch to throw in there because it adds a little bit of paranormal with a little bit of conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
So another conspiracy that warrants what, you know, the ship being sunk intentionally was that there was a ship that refused to help. So according to some theories, the Norwegian seal hunting ship Samson was in the vicinity of the Titanic while the ship was sinking. Some people believe that the lights that were depicted in the movie, you know, where they think they see a ship
mm-hmm.
off in the distance, which was actually lights that were seen by survivors. Some believe that those were the lights from the Samson. One crew member of the Samson claimed to have seen rockets coming from the direction of what turned out to be the scene of the Titanic sinking, but because they were hunting in territorial waters, they ignored the distress signals.
They didn't want to get their ass kicked.
Right, basically, yeah. So that right there points to, okay, well, maybe it was a SEAL ship, but if you look at it from a different perspective, it could be a competitive ship that J.P. Morgan was like, hey, don't touch. You know what I mean? So moving on from that, I mean, there's even been theories about that blame the guys that were up in the nest the night of hitting the iceberg. One theory claims that the guy in the nest forgot his binoculars and therefore didn't see the iceberg coming, puts the blame on him. Another theory states that there were two men in the nest, but that they were gay together.
Oh, so they were just popping each other's rivets.
Right. So since homosexuality was so frowned upon back then, they kept quiet about that because they didn't want it to be known that they were up there lovemaking.
Popping rivets.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as that goes, that's all of the main weird conspiracies. Stu, what's your take on this?
Do we want to do the countdown like we normally do? What we think?
Yeah, and is this something that would warrant an over-caffeinated segment? Because I think it would.
I think you can run with it a lot more than I can.
Yeah, but let's do it anyways, because the people, Stu.
The people.
So, I mean, not right now, obviously. We'll do a separate segment. We'll give you a week to think about it kind of thing, and we'll throw it up.
Just regurgitate it, throw it right up.
This admittedly is a slightly pre-recorded episode, so we'll throw it out a couple days after this episode airs just to, you know, get some gears turning. But, yeah, as far as out of the conspiracies that we heard here, we can do the countdown.
Out of the conspiracies and the true story?
Yeah, out of the conspiracies and the true story. You want to do the true story as well? I mean, this is conspiracies over coffee.
Well, I'm not going to tell you if I think that the true story is what happened over the fact that a mummy cursed the ship.
Okay, well, that's number three. Number two would be I got to think of what order we talked about them in. The first one being J.P. Morgan set them up.
Set them up and switch the boats?
No, yeah, the number two is switch the boats.
Oh.
And then number three being the mummy. So, want to do it that way, one, two, or three?
Is one the true story? I don't remember the number.
One is the J.P. Morgan intentionally crashed the Titanic to kill his competitors.
Okay.
Number two being that the boats were switched. Number three being the mummy. And number four being the true story, I guess.
Okay,
let me take a second here. Because I have a feeling that my over-caffeinated, I think I'm going to go so overboard on that I'm probably going to write a book about it.
Like, oh, God.
Like, I feel like it's going to be, I'm going to start to believe in my own thing. But until then, you remember what one, two, three, and four are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you ready? On the count of three. After three, we do it.
Okay.
One, two, three. One.
Four.
Okay, so you believe the true story.
I believe that the Titanic just hit an iceberg.
I could go with that. But, I mean, it just seems weird to me. The fact that you're going across the Atlantic, this gigantic body of water, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you go there? They knew that there was warm front in the water crossing with a cold front. They got all the reports that said, hey, there's a bunch of killer icebergs floating around here. And yet, this is being ignored. And so you ignored the signals because they were under the intention that, oh, it's a beautiful, you know, no moon, beautiful night, still waters. And yet, nobody sees this iceberg, which is funny because there was actually a 30-second delay by the captain that would have completely saved the ship if the original story is the true story. When they called him and said iceberg dead ahead, there was a 30-second delay on his part before he called down and said kick the motors in reverse and started steering the ship. And had he done it immediately, ship wouldn't have sank. So, and you mean to tell me that an engineer that built that thought that those airtight, you know, I forget the damn word now. The airtight compartment. No, the airtight compartments were actually airtight. If considering they're underwater, you mean to tell me they're airtight once, you know, water goes up over top of those walls that are just a couple feet above sea level?
I would think so, because I think he would want that to be what he was known for building the ship. See what I'm saying?
What, just by engineering it on his own?
Yeah.
Well, you failed, bud.
Well, yeah, not saying he did good.
I guess that's probably why he just stared at a picture of a ship like, what
He's
did
like,
I do
wow,
wrong?
I could have built one that didn't
just
sink.
Just chiefing down a cigarette. But, I mean, either way, I'm not necessarily saying that I do or don't believe in the setup. I'm just saying I don't think it gets enough credibility because I think it's more possible than people lead it, you know, or let it be.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody acts like, oh, well, J.P. Morgan wasn't just calling the shots. No, this was a charted, navigated thing that they stayed the course on. Even though beforehand they switched the course a bunch of times, they wound up on, you know, on this course going right through this Death Valley of icebergs. And it's a lot like JFK's motorcade. We're going to switch the course a bunch of times until we get you to go right here, super slow around this curve, just in time for somebody to assassinate you. I just think, I believe they hit an iceberg, don't get me wrong, but it seems like it's possible that there's more at play there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially for JP Morgan to just back out at the last second because of business, quote unquote, even though a lot of the people that you're going to be doing business with just jumped on that ship. So, just the way I look at it, like I said, I'm probably going to do some research on an over-caffeinated segment, and I'm probably going to creep myself out with how accurate I feel like it is. But that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That is the Titanic, the conspiracies over coffee version.
Do you want to hear a fun fact that something that just happened?
Absolutely.
Did you hear about the cracker that just sold that was on the Titanic? There was a guy that was on the Titanic and took a thing of crackers that were on the boat to take them home. One just sold at auction. Guess how much it sold for? A single cracker. Not even in a container.
Not in a container.
Single cracker.
Did it go down with the ship and they recovered it?
No. A guy took it off the sinking ship.
And has it been authenticated?
Yes.
I would hope not any more than like $10,000.
$23,000.
Why? It's a cracker.
Yep.
If I had that kind of money to buy a $23,000 cracker, I would be putting it in some tomato soup. Like, I would eat it.
Yeah, that's just one of the fun facts of something that just happened.
Jeez. And again, you know, any way you look at this, whether conspiracy or not, major tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of lives lost. Luckily, you know, none of the ancestors of these people are even probably kicking to the point where they're really all that traumatized by it anymore. So if we said anything that seemed too sketchy, then whatever, you're not listening to this anyways. So, social media things.
Facebook.
Like the Facebook page and get a little chatty on there. We like when people talk.
You don't even need to talk
about...
You
don't need to be a closet conspiracy theorist.
You don't even need to talk about the podcast.
Right.
Just talk about what you think some conspiracies are and just get something flowing.
Yeah, I feel like the problem is that a lot of people are like closet conspiracy theorists where they just don't like to talk about it.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, talk about it.
It helps you a lot. This has made us, crazier, but it's also helped with the crazy.
Right, exactly. And it helps question things, because if you don't question things in life, then you're just operating on a very, how do I put it without sounding like a jerk?
Well, we all know you're
operating on an agenda that's not yours. Let me put it that way. So also on Twitter on Twitter at Cons Over Coffee. Go follow us there. You can follow me on Twitter personally, but that one's more football geared because I do a football podcast that I'm not going to plug at this time. That's me at AB Couch Coach. So feel free to follow me on there if you are into football.
I don't have a Twitter. I don't understand it.
Stu doesn't understand it whatsoever.
I'm
an
85-year-old man in a 26-year-old body.
A falling apart 26-year-old
exactly.
body.
Exactly. I feel like an 80. I just have the youthful face of a 26-year-old.
The number. Hit him with the number.
231-237-8329.
Yep. Text, call.
Text, call. Leave voicemails. Whatever.
Yeah, hit us up with them iTunes reviews. Those are huge.
Five stars.
Yeah, five stars. Asshole.
Well, you did it again. You called that person asshole.
I only did it because I said it last week jokingly, and then Stu gave me like a come to Jesus meeting about calling a fan an asshole. So there it was again. I don't actually mean it. But you're an asshole. So
three
anyways.
Times.
Yeah. Go ahead and change that to a five. That'd be great.
Maybe I'll stop calling you an asshole.
I'll call you an awesome person.
Huh.
But, anyways, just joking. Leave us iTunes reviews, regardless of what they are. Preferably five-star asshole, but...
five times.
Just joking. Sorry. It's because I know Stu's just having a conniption over there. Stu's having a freaking canary. Stan Romanek.
Oh.
Oh, gross. What a gross series. Anyways, getting off topic. Do the social medias, the follows, subscribes, likes, all that other crap.
The Twitters.
Yep, the Twitters. And until next time, trust no one, question everything.
And join us next week for a fresh pot of Conspiracies Over Coffee.